You're listening to WTUL New Orleans. This is the News and Views Show. My name is Janet, and we're here with Alexander Bourne, who is a young man who ended up spending 9 months in jail over an alleged theft of a pair of shoes. So, Alexander, why don't you give us some background about this issue? How did you end up in OPP for 9 months over a pair of shoes?
You know, Janet, first and foremost, thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate the invitation. But to answer your question, I'm actually still trying to figure that out as well. You know, it's a $1 million question for not only me, but many taxpaying individuals throughout the city. People are getting frustrated, you know, and, you know, they wanted instant gratification as to why I was spending so much time in jail, why I was in jail at all, right? And, right. You know, so, you know, that's the real reason why we're starting to gain a lot of traction as to the support in which we're receiving at this time to fight these. I mean, you got to understand, Janet, these charges levied against me, they're absurd. You know, at the end of the day, I am a young entrepreneur who is socially minded and civically engaged right here, not only in the city of New Orleans, but throughout the country and so forth. So, you know, we got a lot of questions to answer. You know, this all derived from a simple delayed order of one pair of shoes. You see, essentially, in short, I had a client who's a prominent trial attorney here in the city of New Orleans. He and his wife had given me a pair of shoes to be repaired. Excuse me, some shoes to be repaired. He got his shoes back in the time that we had agreed to, while his wife did not. In the meantime, between time of her getting her shoes back in a satisfactory condition, the husband decided that he was going to pull some strings over at the district attorney's office to get some bogus felonious theft charges filed against me. So I had actually been going to court for these matters for about 5 months in full compliance. I never missed a court date.
This was after the lawyer filed the charges against you.
Exactly. So I had been.
So you were in pretrial.
Exactly. Okay. Which, you know, I'm more than willing to discuss as well, you know, because I've actually experienced the flaws within the pretrial services that the Vera Institute had implemented into the court system a couple years back. But nevertheless, I go to court for 5 months in full compliance. I never miss a court date. And I decided that it was best that I depart ways with my then attorney. And that's what I did. And so when I went to notify Judge Marullo on my next scheduled court date that I had formally done so, he says, "Oh, is that what you did? Go sit over there." And over there was about 10 or 12 men dressed in orange jumpsuits. And at that time, my heart pretty much dropped. But what he also did, you know, which is, you know, very disturbing, is he revoked my RRR bond, which is essentially a free bond. He increased it to $25,000, but he also placed a hold on me, which hindered me from posting that very same bond that he had set. It's essentially what happened to the young man in South Carolina that, you know, went and did the shooting at the church. The world went crazy when he received a $1 million bond. But what they didn't realize was that that young man had actually had a hold placed on him by the judge, which hindered him from posting that very same $1 million bond, because essentially the hold trumps the bond, right? And so that's what happened to me. And so for many months, you know, I was under the impression that, you know, hey, I can, you know, pay this money and I can get out of jail, right? I could pay a percentage of this $25,000, you know, I think it's like 10 or 13% or something like that, and I can get out of jail. And, you know, along the way, I got a lot of people to say no, 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 no. But I also got some people to say yes, 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 yes. And, you know, when they were attempting to post my bond, they couldn't.
Right.
Right. And so, you know, now it's like, all right, well, what the heck? And so.
Well, let's back up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me also that a $25,000 bond over an alleged theft
yeah.
for a pair of shoes is pretty extreme.
Yeah.
And, you know, in different cities where I've lived, a case like this actually would be handled in a small claims court,
sure.
like a civil district court,
sure.
and, you know, the defendant would never see the inside of a jail, you know, and would not be tried in a criminal court either, would be tried in a civil district court. So this is, you know, this just seems to me emblematic of the amount of resources and money that we spend to prosecute people mm-hmm. like yourself that in really are just mm-hmm. trying to make it in this world.
Sure.
And it's not easy. And I think, you know, you had a business. And tell us a little bit about your shoe repair store.
Sure. So I own Patina Shoe Parlor. We used to have we're a full-service shoe repair company, first and foremost, and we've always been a mobile shoe repair business. But I used to have a shoe repair shop in the Lower Garden District. I guess it's more so the Irish Channel in the 2000 block of Magazine Street. We did that, and we had a great time. But what we realized over time was that our clients didn't necessarily have the time to run up to Magazine Street.
Sure, the other shoe repair
you know, get their services done mm-hmm. and, you know, go back to work mm-hmm. or tend to their normal daily life with their families. So at that time, we just went completely mobile, mm-hmm. offering a pickup and delivery service as well as a mail-in service. And we did really well, you know, but at the end of the day, we still faced a lot of the very same challenges that that most small businesses face today. And, you know, that is the lack of implementation of logistics. You know, my biggest fault as the owner and founder of, you know, this business was not having the proper logistics in place to assure that every order was fulfilled in a satisfactory condition and, you know, not just to the client's standards, but ours.
Right.
You see,
so backlog.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. that we failed at, and I can humbly say that, and you know, but I don't regret it. You see what I'm saying? I started that business with just $156, you know, and as a result to these charges levied against me, you know, and 9 months in jail, you know, that business has completely floundered.
Right.
You know, I will say that that time has not been done in vain. It allowed me to, you know, essentially reevaluate myself as well as my business as a whole. And upon my release, I immediately began to reach out to a lot of the different small business incubators here in New Orleans and around the country to see how we can leverage the resources that they have in place so that we can, you know, reboot this business and make it bigger and better than ever.
Right. But you didn't necessarily have to go through the criminal justice system in order to do that.
Because we were already working on it, strangely so.
Right. And, you know, and a lot of businesses do start up that way, mm-hmm. and you learn by trial and error. And mm-hmm. generally, for the first couple of years, it's really tough, and it's hard to turn a profit for the first 2 years, mm-hmm. and it's just by the, you know, energy and the sweat and dedication that a person puts into their business.
So there was a
charge against you. Mm. You go through the pretrial.
Get remanded, and then the district attorney immediately begins to solicit my other clients.
You were eligible for bond.
I was eligible for
a free bond.
An RR.
And then you go back to court mm-hmm. before the judge, the appointed judge is mm-hmm. Judge Marullo.
Mm-hmm.
And everything
Who's
looks
since
like.
Been disbarred.
Right. And mm-hmm. so, as far as you're concerned, everything looks like this is a procedural matter and
exactly.
you're going to go through whatever it is you
exactly.
need to go through in order to pay the bond and
exactly.
get your, you know, your record cleared. So you go to court on this one day and all of a sudden you find out that your bail is set at $25,000 and there's a hold placed on you which doesn't allow you
to even pay
the bond.
Yeah. Money didn't buy my freedom.
Right.
It couldn't buy my freedom.
Right.
And it took me a long time to realize that.
So what happened that the judge changed his mind on the RR bond?
Well, first, I don't So I think your question kind of overlaps. So I think you're asking what made Judge Calvin Johnson actually release me.
Oh, well, this was Calvin Johnson, not Judge Marullo.
Well, Calvin Johnson released me because he was an ad hoc judge, which is essentially a substitute judge because Judge Marullo had been removed by the Louisiana Supreme Court.
Right, because of the age limit.
Exactly. Okay. So what prompted Judge Marullo to lock me up because I terminated my attorney, we believe at this point, you know, upon thorough investigation, that he received a $1,000 bribe that he simply tried to disguise as a political contribution in exchange for holding me to assure that it wouldn't be easy for me to get out of jail, knowing that he was going to, you know, be in this transitional process. And, you know, I would pretty much get lost in the system, as I did. But I was smart enough to, you know, continue to be proactive and, you know... My fingers got arthritis because I wrote so many letters.
So he used the excuse of your firing your attorney as the reason to lock you up.
Which
but you had every right.
That's my constitutional right to assure that I have effective and competent consultation.
Right. What a mess. Yeah. So you're in the court and then you get... He asks you to go and sit down with these other inmates. You're all of a sudden wondering what is going on. What happened to you in that experience? So you're asked to sit on one side of the court. You're beginning to realize that you might be going to jail.
Oh, I knew I was going to jail. He made it very clear that I was not walking back out of that courtroom. You know, the sheriff deputies took me in the back. They handcuffed me and put me in this 4x6 room, maybe a little bit bigger. But it was a very uncomfortable setting, a very demeaning setting, and a very violent setting, you know. And, you know, they put me with the real killers, you know, the real robbers, the real rapists, and the real deal Holyfields of the criminality as a whole, you know. And you know, it was discouraging at first, and it was stressful, Janet, and you know, but fortunately for me, I had a lot of prayer warriors in my life, you know, along the way. So I was able to, you know, find different spiritual avenues to help cope with, you know, all of these this whole ordeal. So
what were your days like at OPP when you were locked up, like after
I could write a book on, you know, how actually there's a movie out right now. It's called Get Hard, starring Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell, I believe, where Kevin Hart pretty much you know, tries to teach this Caucasian gentleman, you know, what the prison life is going to be like, right? I could, like, outshine Kevin Hart in that. And I could tell you right now that life at OPP is not easy. You know, people out here think that, you know, this jail that's being built is going, you know, it's like beautifying these criminals. No, you know, it's tough back there. You know, I was living in a tent majority of my time. I lived in almost every part of the jail, first and foremost, throughout this 9 months. But I was living in a tent for the majority of my time. You know, I often ask people, you know, do you know what it's like to live in a tent? You know, and the first thing that they say is, yeah, when I go camping. Yeah. You know, so imagine literally living in a tent, you know, in this very demeaning environment with so many individuals who feel completely lifeless, completely hopeless. You know, for Christmas, I had to, like, almost beg my mom to put $100 on the phone just so I can give out free phone calls to the other 80-some-odd individuals that lived in the dorm because they had no access to their families because they couldn't afford it.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And, you know, my mom didn't really understand, but, you know, I had panic attacks when I didn't have money on the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what really helped me, you know, help my time go past, you know, because if I didn't have access to the outside world, I felt like there was no one. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Because, yeah. I mean, I always tell myself I feel like I got dumber, but, you know.
Well, I'd really like to have you back on the show at some point to sort of delve into that experience a little deeper and what it means to be incarcerated from experience.
Yeah.
But I want to get back to this case about the shoes right now. So, so you end up spending 9 months in jail. You are unable to bail yourself out.
Correct.
What stage are you at right now with the whole process? I mean, you were released from jail because you did your time.
No.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so...
How were you released from jail?
Everyone wants to know that question, right? Because at Tulane and Broad, they have this culture that says that if you are charged with a felony, okay, the likelihood of you walking out of there not a convicted felon is 5% likely, literally, because the district attorney, he has like a 95% conviction rate, right? And so, you know, that's the culture, you know, from the judge's perspective, from the lawyer's perspective, from the district attorney's perspective, and even from the inmate's perspective, right? But I changed that, okay? I made it very clear that I was not walking out of that place a convicted felon, whether it was pre-trial or post-trial, right? I made it very clear to any and everyone that I encountered, you see, and that's what I did. I was proactive every single day and taking the necessary steps to reach out to individuals that had the ability to potentially alter my current position.
Right.
And that's what I did, Janet.
So how do you reach out to people while you're in jail?
It's crazy. So a lot of people...
You were assigned a public defender, is that... Right.
Well, I had a few paid attorneys along the way.
Private attorneys?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the last two of them all essentially ran off with a few thousand dollars for quote-unquote irreconcilable differences that they've still yet to elaborate upon. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. We'll worry about that at a later time. But, yeah, I have a public defender right now, and I've had about six of them because, you know, no one wants to touch this case, right? As simplistic as it sounds, you know, no one wants to take on the case because they know that this district attorney is wrong. They know. They know that this guy took a $5,000 bribe to have me prosecuted. They know that.
So everyone
comes on the case. They come on the case and they recuse themselves, you know, 2-3 days later. For conflicts, right? And it depicts me as a troubled defendant.
And just to clarify, that money that you're talking about was a political donation
whose
wife's shoes didn't get her shoes
exactly.
back. Around the time of the elections and around the time they put a hold on you rather than
a timing couldn't have been better on our side.
Right.
I mean, you know it's so bad when the FBI agrees to, you know, take a look into this, you know, because they get hundreds if not thousands of cases a month, you know, requesting, you know, to have something looked into, and they were very adamant about, you know, taking the necessary steps to, you know, investigate this accordingly. You understand? I understand that, you know, I'm up against a big political powerhouse and I have no money. Mm-hmm. That's why we're here today to take the necessary steps to, you know, essentially garner some additional financial and or social support at the very least.
Right. And this is the problem, I think, in New Orleans. You know, it's a great city. It has a seedy underbelly of, you know, it's who you know. It's a very much who knows whose city.
You know what I figured out throughout this process, and I don't mean
that?
To cut you off.
No,
I mean, I mean to cut you off because I cut
that?
You off. But people always say it ain't about what you know, it's who you know. It ain't who you know, it's what you know, or whatever it may be. But you know what I figured out? It's not about any of that. It's about who knows you.
Right.
Because if individuals do not believe in you, forget about it. Forget about it.
Right. That's a good point. And, you know, this whole pay-to-play system that we live in ultimately ends up actually really costing taxpayers an awful lot of money, too. So, you know, I would think that people would be really concerned about the fact that the district attorney and the judges
They don't want to resolve this matter.
But you're not the only one. So there are a lot of people that have expressed the same issues that you are today. And this keeps happening. And so, you know, so how much are taxpayers paying for you to spend 9 months in jail because someone didn't get their shoes back?
Well,
right?
Actually.
And I mean, I don't like to talk about things in terms of economic issues because ultimately I'm a human rights advocate. And so my first concern is always humanitarian.
Sure.
But we do have to think about that, right?
You know,
if we want to be a healthy, functioning city.
Definitely.
Wouldn't it be better that we spend our resources, you know?
I mean, let's put it into perspective. From a fiscal standpoint, we have hundreds of firefighters right now who cannot receive their pensions that they are legally entitled to. Yet, you have this young entrepreneur, goes to court for 5 months, get incarcerated, and then has been spending another 3 months in court, right? Let's put a dollar amount on that. I don't know. It's thousands of dollars, though.
Right.
If not, maybe we've probably topped over $100,000 easily because I've been to court almost 80 times since May 1st of 2014. That's a lot of times, Janet.
Yeah.
You see, what else can we do with all of this darn money? We got roads. Right, everybody. We got the Fix My Street campaign still rocking and rolling,
and of course, healthcare.
We got healthcare.
My major concerns.
Look at how many people in New Orleans without healthcare.
Right. Well, and without services or long term.
Oh, we don't want to. We don't want to talk about from a mental standpoint that is completely negated throughout the whole city.
Right.
You understand? I can speak from personal experience because I come from a city in St. Paul, Minnesota, that has, you know, adequate mental health care for their citizens.
Right.
I mean, I have longstanding relationships right now with mental health advocates in Minnesota right now that's been doing this work for years and years and years. And when you put that in perspective what they're doing in Minnesota and what we have here, we have nothing.
Right.
You know, we got I don't mean to
I don't want to bash Mitch Landrieu,
our mayor here, but I mean, it frustrated me last week when I saw an article where, you know, he was like, oh, we're going to go out and, you know, provide mental health services, you know, for all of these displaced Hurricane Katrina victims, right? Where are you going to get the services from, Mitch?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah.
We don't have them. I'm seeking counseling right now, and I can't find them without being willing to pay $200 an hour.
Yeah.
So if you're listening and you know someone that's willing to provide some mental health counseling, I would love to hear from them if it's at a free or reduced rate.
Yeah, well, we could definitely have a whole show about that because
we don't have them.
That's my wheelhouse as well. So, and actually, Alexander, I'd really like to have you back on the show to talk a little deeper about all of these things and as your case moves forward to keep up with you in your case. And I think one of the things that's a real problem as well is when someone's incarcerated for as long as you were, they begin to lose all of their livelihood, right?
You
can't pay your rent, so you lose your home.
Oh, yeah.
You can't pay for your maybe social services that you're receiving, so you lose those. Some people that have Medicaid coverage, when they're incarcerated for a certain amount of time, they lose it because they can't reapply and keep up with the paperwork and the things that society demands of them in order for them to be able to function.
It really
is difficult. And then if somebody's released, they get into this downward spiral that they can't get out of.
Exactly.
Because of the way the system works. And so a lot of people end up recidivating back to jail, or they become homeless, or they are hospitalized, or God forbid they die.
Yeah.
And they may kill themselves or somebody else. So this is a real, I mean, this is
Janet,
this whole cycle.
I am, let me tell you.
Yeah,
what keeps me strong right now, because everything that you just spoke about, is everything that I've either experienced or is experiencing. You see what I'm saying? As it relates to my livelihood, it's completely diminished.
Right.
You see, and it's unfortunate, but it's reality.
Right.
You know, I'm fortunate enough to, again, have that support system in place that says, you know what, Alex, you have to continue to be optimistic about this situation. In fact, because you're a whole lot optimistic about it than I am, and I've been practicing law in New Orleans for 30-some-odd years, and what you did is, I mean, just Janet, I don't think people really understand. Like, I have 14 felonious theft charges that stem from one delayed order. Right. Excuse me, not 14 felonious theft charges. I have 14 charges, 8 in which are felonious.
Right. And talk about that. How did
all these other...
because here you are, you were trying to survive as a small businessman in New Orleans. You get locked up, and then your business is destroyed. And now, how did you end up with all these other charges? Talk about that.
Yeah, so once the district...
And then we have to wrap up.
So. Oh, yeah, definitely. And so once Judge Marullo remanded me last October because I terminated my attorney, it seemed like he and the DA's office was the only one that knew that I wasn't going to be able to get out of jail because my attorney sure didn't tell me. I just thought I was going to be able to pay this bond, right? But what they did was, they meaning the district attorney's office, they immediately began to solicit my clients via telephone, via email, via social media outlets, encouraging them to file additional charges because they knew that they couldn't have services rendered if I'm incarcerated. You see, so it's like...
Victimizing the victim.
I mean, and it's like, you know... This district attorney, I once heard that, you know, someone had called and, you know, spoke with Leon regarding the situation, you know, and wondering why he did not want to resolve these matters, right? Because everyone has their shoes back many, many months ago. They got their shoes back many, many months ago, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you all want to allow this young man to just refund these clients in full? Because they simply deserve it. Okay, let's be first. We all use service-based businesses, right? If there's an inconvenience, the likelihood of you being refunded, you know, is very high, mm-hmm. right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, these people, innocent people, you know, they experience the inconveniences, an inconvenience as it relates to the services in which they sought, mm-hmm. right? So by proxy, they deserve to not only get their shoes back as they've done, as what has happened, but they deserve to have their money refunded as well. Mm-hmm. The district attorney doesn't want that. He has a motive, and that is to assure that Alexander Bourne is a convicted felon. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? And that's where we butt heads at, because I am in no position at this time, and nor would I ever be in a position to willingly accept a felony. Mm-hmm. These are my civil liberties we're talking about.
Right.
My right to vote.
Right, right.
Do you know the voter inequality statistics as it relates to African Americans in New Orleans? I'll allow you to look that up. It's disturbing.
Let listeners know. Now's the time.
Look at it this way. Average household of three in New Orleans, African American, $43,000 annual income, right? Unemployment rate, African Americans, a whopping 40-some-odd%, right? So let's just talk probability. Mm-hmm. What is the likelihood of you having at least one felonious individual living in one of those households?
Mm-hmm. It's high.
It's high.
Yeah.
People got to rob, steal, and kill to survive.
Right. No, and you make really, really good points. Alexander, we're going to have to wrap it up, but I definitely want to have you back on the show and let people know how they can support you, and if you have any last thoughts, what you want people
definitely.
To know.
Definitely. So what we did was, and it's just a group of concerned citizens, you know, we organized I Support Alex, and, you know, it's not a formal group or anything like that. You know, these are just individuals that have major concerns as it relates to the issues that adversely affect myself, right? And so what we've done is we've made fundraising a huge component of it, you know, and all of the money that we raise will be allocated towards my legal fees in some capacity, because I assure you that it is not cheap. it is not cheap to do this. You know, we are up against some real power, political powerhouses, and they don't think about money. I mean, this guy paid $5,000 to have me prosecuted over a pair of shoes that cost $1,100. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. So, you know, we...
It's definitely a David and Goliath moment.
Yeah, so, you know, we need your financial support. And we also need for you to not only give us your money, but we need for you to share our story, my story. You see what I'm saying? So,
whether listeners are able to donate or not, yeah, it definitely is helpful to share the story.
Share the story. That's it's all about creating awareness at this point. Right. And you can visit the site. It's isupportalex.com. And share your thoughts via social media. I read all of them, the good and the bad, and I share them and I comment and I respond.
Yeah, we'll put that on the website as well, so people know how to contact you. And this audio will be podcasted also, sure, so people can re-listen, and there will be a link. So if you want to share it, you're welcome to share it with
everybody.
Make sure
you use the hashtag #ISupportAlex.
#ISupportAlex. All right. Well, we're going to keep up with you, and we're going to have you back on. And there's just a, you know, there's a whole, you know, I don't even know. There's so many different stories. Mm. You know, this case of yours intersects in so many different points.
Exactly.
And all of those points are stories into themselves.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we'll wish you all the best, and we're going to have to get back to
Janet, our
other programming, but thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate it.